Thanks very much, Shane. Thank you.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. Were you what? You'd feel sorry for me, Hall Martin. You would. You'd feel sorry for him. Miriam Lord writing in the Irish Times today. Big fan of Miriam Lord's. And there's a quote. The other way they take the key line from the article. And the key line from her article today is, they'd been hoping to turn a corner, and they did, right into the path of an oncoming truck. That's a good description. And then even this morning, very good and straightforward and easy to read and easy to understand graphic on the cover of the Irish Times. And what did Fianna Fáil do? They went and tweeted it, and they didn't credit the Irish Times. And then the Irish Times had to slap an Irish Times logo on it, just to keep everybody honest. Paul Scott's graphic, it shows you there, level 1 to 5. There's no level 2.5 in it. And it goes across, you know, how many visitors you can have, gatherings outside, weddings, indoor events, sporting events, restaurants and cafes and pubs, and tells you what are the implications when you're in which level, 1 to 5. And it's all there. It's all there. I was watching the news last night, and congratulations to Drumcliff, Ross's Point. They're in this year's Sligo Senior Football Final for the first time in the club's history. And they're up against Tourlestrane, and they're 4 in a row champions. But they were interviewing members of the committee from Drumcliff, Ross's Point. And they know now the way things are, because they're in level 2 and looking at Paul Scott's graphic on the cover of the Irish Times, that they can have 200 supporters. So that'll be 100 from each club, I would imagine. And the big thing, and it was articulated really well, can't remember the man's name, that's a big problem for them, because he said it was nearly better when there was total lockdown, because they didn't have to worry about who got to see the match. Now they have 100 tickets, and everybody wants to see their club, Drumcliff, Ross's Point, in the county final for the first time in their history. But only 100 people can... That's the type of thing that could split up families. That's the type of thing that you could have movies about in years to come. People will be going to the other side of the road going, Jimmy got a ticket, I didn't get a ticket, I should have got a ticket, Jimmy shouldn't have got a ticket. They'll be talking about that in pubs when we're back into pubs in years to come. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. How are they going to do it? A lottery. Is that fair? Is lottery fair? Should it be to people who can prove that they've been at every match since whatever? It's a tough one. I wouldn't like to be making that decision. Good luck with that, lads, and Drumcliff, Ross's Point. And good luck in the final against Tourlestrane. And good luck to Tourlestrane as well. Speaking of GAA, Philly McMahon is joining us today. 7-time All-Ireland football winner. Of course, 5 in a row, and they're going for 6 in a row this year. And Philly's in to talk to us about that and other things, including the well-being and mental health of young people around the country, because he's an advocate for young people's mental health. So I'm looking forward to talking to Philly McMahon. And we have a man who used to throw bottles off boats back in the day, and only this weekend... Did he say this weekend or last weekend? Anyway, Sunday night, just passed, he got a Facebook communication from a lady in Norway who found one of his bottles that he threw off the side of a ship 21 years ago. Yesterday, we spoke to Dave and Mike, and Dave had found Mike's cup that he hasn't seen in 50 years, and today it's messages in bottles. So any more stories like that, we welcome them to 51551. Or ray@rte.ie. Language is, you know, and misunderstanding language and all that. And you know, even my 8-year-old knows that the dinosaurs became extinct because a meteor hit the planet. And we'd still have T-Rexes and pterodactyls and all sorts of things roaming the earth if it wasn't for that meteor. Well, there's a brilliant thing on TikTok. And it's a paleontologist. And that'd be a person who's an expert on all things dinosaurs. And her name is Eliza Peterson. And she took a joke written by Cameron Tidwell. You don't really need to know the names. All you need to know is that Eliza is a paleontologist. So she knows what she's talking about. And the reason the poor dinosaurs are extinct is because of a breakdown in communication between an angel and our Lord. So it goes a bit like this. The first voice you'll hear is our Lord's. Hey, angel, did you give the dinosaurs more muscle like I asked?
Angel.
What?
I told you to make them meteor, says God.
Make them a meteor? I thought you said make them a meteor, not make them meteor.
Uh-oh. That's how it happens. You see, that's how it happens. A breakdown in communication. Just mishearing meteor, M-E-A-T-I-E-R, for meteor, M-E-T-E-O-R. And like that, there's no dinosaurs on the earth anymore. There's a town in Canada called Asbestos. And the reason they're called Asbestos was because there was an asbestos mine there and there was no imagination around. So they just said, ah, yeah, we just call it Asbestos. And now they're trying to change the name, which is a good idea. And they're thinking of Jeffrey. Jeffrey isn't a good name for a town, is it? Jeffrey. Anyway, they're having sort of a plebiscite and they're asking for suggestions. It's in Quebec. And Phoenix is another one that's come up. Jeffrey and other ones. And they're going to vote on it then. But you wouldn't want to be living in a place called Asbestos, would you? What's the oddest name in Ireland? I mentioned Ballylickey yesterday because Dave was talking to us from Kale Kill, which is just up the road from Ballylickey. That's a sort of a funny sounding name. Muff, of course, everyone mentions Muff. What's that other one? Hackball's Cross. Anyway, I'm sure you have your own. And when we're on names and words for things, do you know the yoke that you use to pair your pencil? I always called it a pencil sharpener. But they're saying now on Twitter that it's called a topper. I've never heard it called a topper in my life. But Dave, who's from Wexford, he says, yeah, topper. How do you get pencil sharpener? How does that become topper? Explain that to me, will you? Explain that to me. Anyway, while you're doing that, you might want to get involved in our brand new quiz. Yes. It's our quiz of today. And that's why we have the Pathé News music playing in the background. So today is the 16th of September. And we've gone through the archives and looked at what appeared in the papers over the years on this very day. And we've come up with 10 questions, 5 each for our contestants. And whoever answers most correctly will be getting a prize thanks to Discover Northern Ireland. They've given us a 2-night stay with dinner on one evening in the boutique 4-star Shipkey Hotel in the historic walled city of Derry. Lovely city, Derry is. It's situated at the hub of the city's shopping, arts and social scene, so plenty for you to do and discover during your stay. And you might walk across the Peace Bridge and get your photograph taken there. So, 2 people on after 4 o'clock, but to be on, you have to answer our qualifying question and ring 1850 715 900. And the qualifying question today is this. Okay. Matt Damon is in the news again because he's back in Ireland filming. In which county is he reported to be filming? So, Matt Damon is reported to be filming again in Ireland. In which county? 1850 715 900. And we'll have 2 people on after 4 o'clock. There you go. That's that done. 51551 ray at rte.ie for other communication. Stop that and say good afternoon. Yes, here we go. Powerful. I can Tina Turner and River Deep, Mountain High. Phil Spector produced that. And it's the work he's most proud of, I read somewhere recently. Great song. 51551 ray at rte.ie. The 200 will include players, officials, etc. Has that been clarified? It has. So that's bringing you down to what? There's 30 players, that's 170. And then there's what's going to be another 20 people, that's 150. So 75 from each club. Oh my word. Yes, topper. Topper for pencil pair from another Wexford woman. We always called it a pair array. I only ever heard them called the pencil pair. I grew up in Tipperary many years ago, says Pat in Portlaoise. And we always topped our pencils with a topper. That's Janice in Dunmore East, close to Wexford. And on names of towns and places, what about Farta, townsland of Moynalty, outside of Kells? Miriam, we had somebody on the All-Ireland quiz from Farta and we established that Farta is an anglicisation of a Gaelic name, which translates as the place of graves, if my memory serves me correctly. Listening in the sunshine, my sister lives in a place called Effin. She lives near the Effin Church. Yes, we called a pencil sharpener a topper at school approximately 40 years ago. We had a run-in with Facebook because of Effin back in the day, because one of our listeners
was something happened with their Facebook post, because Facebook, or some algorithm for Facebook, read it as a curse, as a swear word. So they had to fight. And eventually Facebook, the Facebook people or the Facebook algorithms accepted that effing was actually a place and not a curse in some people's worlds. And there's Margaret. Have you heard of a place, namely effing? And we have. With regards to messages in bottles, when I was in national school back in the 1970s, I put a note into two separate bottles and put it in my local stream when there was a flood. About 2 years later, I got a reply from a person in Dungarvan and another reply from a lady in Youghal. My small local stream is a tributary of the River Blackwater, which meets the sea in Youghal. And by the way, the thing to sharpen or top the pencil is a topper. We always said it. I must top my pencil. That's another Margaret. And we wish our son's partner, Wendy Stevenson from Ballybrack, a very happy 40th birthday today. They're celebrating it in Gorey. Have a great evening. Love and hugs from Mick and Siobhan Cush in Sallynoggin. And I've been working from home since March. Myself and my son tuned in to you every weekday since he has gone back to school and the house feels empty. But I'm so glad to have you to keep me company. That's Yvonne. Well, we're delighted to have you company as well, Yvonne. Yeah, things have changed for a lot of people over the last 4 weeks, haven't they? And the house is quieter without the kids running around, if you had kids. And the traffic is heavier because people are dropping kids off. And it's just a different world again. A new phase. It does look worrying for Dublin. You sense that it's going to be escalated to level 3 with everything that goes along with that. So you can only have people from one other household in your house. No social or family gatherings, they're saying. A wedding, 25 people can attend. No indoor gatherings. No matches or events. You can stay open in a cafe, but additional restrictions and additional restrictions in pubs as well. That's level 3, if it happens. And we're talking about language, and the language around, you know, they're using the word encourage. So they won't discourage you or tell you not to travel outside the county. They're encouraging you not to travel outside of Dublin. So it sounds positive at the start. Oh, they're encouraging us to do something. Great, encouragement. Woo. And then encourage you not to do something. Now, I'm sure that didn't happen by accident. I'm sure somebody told them to use those words. That's the way it works. You have all these spin doctors and media trainers that tell our politicians how to speak and what to say. Most of the time, not all the time. Marion Purcell has been on to RayRT.ie. Just wondering if you give a shout out to the Fahy family from Broadford, County Limerick, who are doing a 125-kilometre walk in aid of the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland and in memory of their mam, Kay. The family are walking from their home in Broadford to the Burren Centre in Kilfenora between Saturday, September 19th, this coming Saturday, and Wednesday, 23rd, this day week. Happy to give them a shout out and good luck to the Fahy family from Broadford on their 125-kilometre walk. And make sure you have good, comfortable shoes.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
On pencil sharpeners, call them a pear, not a topper, says Christine Thurless. And your question about what to call the yoke for sharpening pencils reminds me of a very funny true story. Many years ago, three of us were having a few drinks in a pub in Galway when one of the lads took one of those things out of his pocket. A debate arose as to what it should be called. We couldn't agree between parer, topper or sharpener. An English friend came in and we agreed we'd accept whatever he said. So I asked Paul, that was the name of our English friend, what would you call that? He said, oh, I think Cecil will be quite a nice name. That's very good. A topper is what you put on the top of a cake for decoration. A cake topper. The name always used for sharpening a pencil was either a pencil pair or a pencil sharpener. So there. But you're not from Wexford or Waterford. Now, our next guest, no stranger to the show, Emma D'Souza. We spoke to Emma D'Souza and her husband, Jake, back in October of last year. They've been involved in a 5-year legal battle, and it has resulted in a massive change to UK immigration law, bringing it in line with the terms of the Good Friday Agreement. But it's also left them with a hefty legal bill of over £50,000. Emma's on the line from Belfast, is it, Emma?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, good afternoon.
Good to talk to you again. So I suppose we have to fill people in just briefly. Do you have a synopsized version of your 5-year battle?
Oh boy, I can try and condense it down to the shortest statement as I can.
If you would, please, yeah, yeah.
So the bullet points are, you know, I married my husband, he's an American citizen, we fell in love, he fell in love with Belfast. And so we then went to get his residence card as the spouse of an Irish and an EU national, only for the British Home Office to say that, well, you were born in Northern Ireland, so therefore you're British, whether you like it or not.
Yes.
And then I, of course, took the challenge to the Home Office and said, well, hold on a second. The Good Friday Agreement says I can be Irish or British or both and accepted as such. And I'm an Irish citizen. I've only ever held an Irish passport. I've never claimed British citizenship and I should be accepted as Irish.
Yes.
And then launched the mammoth 5-year legal case that came from that. We initially won in 2017. And then the Home Office spent 2 years appealing and desperately trying to overturn that decision, which they then did in October last year. And then before we headed into the Court of Appeal of Northern Ireland,
so you appealed their appeal. You appealed their appeal then?
We did, yes. So we then appealed back in October, and we were proceeding to the Court of Appeal of Northern Ireland. We were due to actually be before the court at the start of June. But 2 weeks before we went to court, the Home Office conceded to our argument and actually changed domestic UK immigration law as a result of our case.
And brought it in line with the terms of the Good Friday Agreement.
That's it. It actually, two big things happened from this concession. One is that all British and Irish citizens born in Northern Ireland will now be considered EU citizens for the purposes of immigration. And secondly, it's the first time ever that the definition of a relevant person of Northern Ireland per the Good Friday Agreement, which...
Oh, we're losing you there. That's on the tie line.
An Irish citizen, a British citizen, or a dual British and Irish citizen has finally went into domestic UK law.
Okay. Now, it was always significant, but with Brexit and the UK leaving the EU forever and ever, coming down the tracks, it's even more important, isn't it?
Well, this is it, because thankfully now we do have a legal precedent that reaffirms our right to be accepted as Irish or British or both. And we have really a very rare lifting up of rights where people born in Northern Ireland who maybe only identify as British can actually access more favourable family reunion rights as an EU citizen as a result of this case. So post-Brexit, we now have a precedent that we can try to build on in order to maintain EU rights for all the people of Northern Ireland on a more permanent basis.
Okay. So what you and Jake have done at huge expense, not just financial, not just money-wise, but your own time and effort and you know, emotional distress and all that, you have made a huge change that makes a big difference to a lot of people. And yet, you're footing the bill. It doesn't make sense to me, Emma.
Yeah, this is the tough part. You know, I think many people maybe thought that we had access to legal aid or financial assistance throughout these 5 years, because there's not too many people that would take on a monolithic giant like the British Home Office that has endless access to resources and funds and do that as a private citizen with no financing or access to legal aid. But we did that because we knew that our case was going to bring about change. And we felt that it was almost like our responsibility to see that through, regardless of the enormous financial, emotional and personal cost of that. And so it's rewarding to see at the very end of this challenge that we have made a significant change that benefits families across Northern Ireland. And any one of the phone calls we got that was from someone who is now going to be reunited with their family makes that all worthwhile. But the massive downside is we're now sitting in
debt.
Huge litigation debt,
yeah,
that we are struggling to try and get a hold of because we're just two ordinary working people that have regular jobs.
So it was going to court and then they conceded 2 weeks before the court date. Now, if it had gone to court and you had won, they would probably have had to pay your legal fees. But because it didn't go to court, the courts decided that you would pay your legal fees and then the British government would pay their own. That's the way it panned out.
That's the way it panned out, unfortunately. So we are essentially paying for the Court of Appeal hearing, even though we didn't make it to the Court of Appeal, because the Home Office conceded so close to the court date we're now liable for those costs. And it does feel like an almost one last injustice that we are liable for such huge costs when in the end they conceded that they were wrong all along.
You're probably sick of appeals, but can you appeal this decision?
Unfortunately not. Actually, what happened initially was they had asked us to cover the government's costs, which we then challenged. We went to the court and we said, we're not going to pay for the government's costs when they conceded to our argument. And that's when the judge ruled that each side is liable for their own costs. So unfortunately, we are now saddled with this. We have to get it out of the way in order to move forward as a family.
Okay, so you've set up a GoFundMe page. Give our listeners the details.
Absolutely, we have. And it's actually really only been through donations from the public that we were able to maintain this challenge. And when we got this huge final bill, I mean, we were floored by how expensive this was and how much it was going to cost us. But I mean, hundreds of people rallied around to support us in that moment. And it really was a reminder that we're not alone in this, and we never were alone, because this case wasn't just about us. It was about everyone. So we do have a GoFundMe. It is on my Twitter. It is available online. If you just put in Emma D'Souza and GoFundMe, you're going to find the link to that. And we currently have raised quite a significant amount. We still have another 18,000 to go, and we will hopefully at that point at least have our legal bills coverage.
And you can move on from this chapter in your life, because this has preoccupied your married years to Jake when you should have been having the crack. C or AIC?
Absolutely. I mean, we still have plenty of crack in between. We try to get on with life as best as we can, but we always had that cloud hanging over us of our next court date and the next challenge and having to sort of hold the line. It was a pretty heavy burden to have at times, but we now are in a position where once we have this taken care of, we might finally be able to start or married life together like we had planned to 5 years ago before we found ourselves in such an unprecedented situation.
And Jake is a musician, of course, down here anyway. I'm sure it's similar up the north, that all venues have been closed down. So how is he getting on?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty devastating. Coronavirus has impacted so many of us in terms of our livelihoods and our lives, and it's been a really difficult period to adjust for everyone in society, and we are no different from that. During the pandemic, of course, all music venues have closed down. Thankfully, Jake did get a job as a customer service agent to work from home in the interim, but of course, as a musician, it's not his ideal job. But he is working away, and I'm now back to work as well, managing the coffee shop. So we're just buckling in and getting on with things as best we can, but certainly in our position, this litigation bill would be an insurmountable figure for anyone to try and get together.
Yeah, and to understate it, this brush with the Home Office has sort of awakened in you an interest in political activism, which you're pursuing.
Well, this is it. Yeah, actually, maybe a silver lining? I don't know. But before the case started, was completely disinterested in politics, was politically disenfranchised, like so many in the North. But of course, I have found something that I'm incredibly passionate about now and something that I care greatly about. And the biggest thing that surprised me about our case was discovering that fundamental aspects of the Good Friday Agreement were never put into domestic law. So for me, I have found something that I'm going to continue working on, which is ensuring that the Good Friday Agreement is upheld and is implemented and that citizens' rights are protected. And I'm going to continue to campaign independently and be politically active in that regard. And I kind of love it.
A lot of people wouldn't be as strong and courageous and persistent as you've been. And in a way, oddly, like, your case would discourage other people from, you know, taking a case against the Home Office or any government agency.
Well, this is what we are facing as private citizens. I mean, when you're going up against a political giant or a government body that, you know, can, you know, has access to endless resources and funding, it does make it very daunting as a private citizen to take on that challenge. But every now and again, you don't need to have the same access to resources. You just need to be on the right side of justice. And I think that our case can actually be a positive reminder to people that whilst they might want you to think you don't have the power to challenge them, we all actually do.
Yeah. Rory wants you to say your GoFundMe details again, slowly. His word, not mine.
Of course. Thank you, Rory. Our GoFundMe details are Emma D'Souza GoFundMe. You will find it if you just put that into Google. Or it's under Defend Appeal Against British Government is the actual link. Or you can find it on my Twitter page, which is Emma D'Souza.
And somebody else wants to know the spelling of your surname.
We have a tendency to talk a bit fast.
Yes, S-O-U-Z-A is how Emma spells her surname. D-E-S-O-U-Z-A, two separate words. Emma, congratulations. And, you know, you'll be in the annals of the history of Northern Ireland and the Good Friday Agreement. And I don't know, if that doesn't pay legal fees, but it must give you a nice feeling in your tummy every so often.
Yeah, it does feel pretty good. It's kind of hard to quantify or put into words. Being able to come to the end of this and haven't actually achieved something that will have a tangible benefit for so many people, it's something that we're both incredibly proud of, and it has actually been a great honour to be able to stand up for other people in Northern Ireland, and hopefully we'll be able to continue to do that.
Great. We'll speak again, I'm sure. Emma D'Souza, thanks very much. Mind yourself.
Absolutely.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, 51551, let's see what you're saying about pencil sharpeners here. In our house, we used to call it a pencil pair. Can I also ask you to wish my sister-in-law, Helen Cronin, a very happy birthday today? Done. That's from Aideen Connery. We have a definitive there. In Irish, it's a barador, which translates to topper. Gurumagut, Colin McDonagh from Golliv. So that's the connection there. That's where topper comes from. Barador is the Irish thing that translates to topper. Now we're joined in studio by 7-time All-Ireland winner and social activist, Philly McMahon. How are you doing, Philly?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
No problem.
So where do we start? 33 a few weeks ago?
Yeah, getting old. Getting old.
Are you very conscious of your age?
No.
No?
No.
No, but being a sort of an,
only
elite,
a number for me,
an elite sportsman.
Oh, well, I mean, when it comes to sport, when you're walking into the change room, you'll probably notice it a little bit all right. But
yeah.
No, like, I mean, you try not to think of it, but it's definitely there. Like,
because you're an elder lemon now. And
I am, unfortunately. Yeah. We were doing like the young lads versus the old lads in training last night with Ballymun Kickhams, and I tried to sneak into the younger group. Didn't happen, though.
McMahon over here.
Yeah, straight over away. Here. Get over to the old lads.
So you're in the final, the county final, is it?
Yeah. We've Ballyboden, who won it last year, who are really strong. So it's going to be a big challenge, but it's nice to be back there with the group of lads we've had, especially with the six Dublin lads being away for so long every year that we can actually play a little bit.
Yeah, because this year clubs are getting the benefit of their county players a lot more.
Exactly, yeah. We would have been... generally it would have been a longer season for us if we get to All-Ireland final with Dublin, but having to, you know, having that bit of time together to blend and to have the band and the crack, it's been great.
Yeah. And do you think the GAA might re-look at, because the people have been asking for changes for the last few years, saying that there was too much pressure on people like yourself and that the clubs were losing out. Do you think because of COVID they might look at things differently in the future?
I'm not sure. It You'd like to think that there will be learnings from what's happening from a GAA perspective. But ultimately, you're always going to have issues. Yeah. You know, regardless if you go too much towards the club, you're going to have issues in the county. So I wouldn't like to be that person making those decisions.
Right. So there was a bit of a dust-up, Shemozzle, Malie in the semi-final. What day was it, on Sunday or Saturday?
Sunday, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Was it serious?
Not really, no. Two lads were going on, and then a few lads ran in to pull each other out. And look, this is the way when you're in a semi-final and you're, you know, in a heated battle, this just happens, you know.
Yeah. And how would you describe it in Ballymun Kickers? How would you describe that? What happened? A schmozzle or what? Or
a little melee.
Now, people will know that you're an activist for mental health and other things, and that's part of the reason you're here, because you're involved in an initiative with the Irish Youth Foundation and VHI.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I have a charity called Halftime Talk, and it's to help at-risk youth. And when I was asked to get involved as an ambassador for this campaign, it was a no-brainer for me, because I think this cohort of people in society now are very vulnerable. I think they have been for years, and then add in the added pressure of social media and technology, add in then the pandemic that we're in, we are going to have serious issues at the other end of this pandemic. So there's loads of brilliant community organisations doing great work to keep young people, you know, on the straight and narrow, and keep them in a good pathway in life. But then there's, for every one good thing, there's three or four options to go the other way. So the opportunities are unfortunately there for to go down a negative pathway rather than a good pathway. So, and that on top of that, when you think about it, you've got all these issues in society. You've got trauma, childhood trauma. You've got drug addiction. You've got mental health, and you've got technology and all these addictions and all these issues. And then you've got something that can combat that in youth clubs and community groups. But as a country, we actually punish those by funding them poorly, which doesn't make any sense.
No, yeah. So this is a grant system between 5 and 10 thousand euro available to charity, non-profit organisations around the country who are helping young people in the area of mental health and well-being. And you can go to IYF, that's the Irish Youth Foundation, /grants, and you'll get details of it.
Exactly.
And it's, so that's a lot
it's
of money.
Simple as that,
that can make a huge difference.
Yeah, definitely.
10,000, yeah. We've spoken before about you're the type of person who knows how lucky you are. You know, you've said that to me before, that you mentioned it already there. You could have gone down a different path. Was enough for sport.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, sport, I would say, is in many ways was my saviour in terms of my life, because I suppose I had a lot of trauma from seeing things happening in my area, or from, let's say, from the family home in terms of my brother John's addiction. So with that trauma, how do I vent that? What would I have vented it doing? And if I didn't have sport, where could I have vented that? Like, you know, and that's what I always think about. Like, that's how easy I could have turned into criminality because of that negative energy I had. So I was able to vent that playing sport and have mentors see that and funnel it in the right direction.
Yeah, and you were lucky you were very good at it.
Well, I wasn't very good at it at the beginning, but I definitely had a lot of energy that could be moulded into being a footballer, that's why I'm the type of player I am.
And, you know, I've probably said this to you before, but whenever we've interviewed a number of heroin addicts on the programme over the years, and there's a group of people who text in, you know, and whereas they'd, you know, I'd be talking to them about, you know, been victims nearly, you know, they were brought up in a certain area and they saw that the only way they could go was to take drugs. And then you get the people who say, well, I know somebody who was brought up in the same area and they didn't take drugs. Like, it's about choices, and some people make the wrong choices. And do you think that about you and John? Because, you know, you went one way and he went the other way, and he's not with us anymore.
I agree with that. Yeah, that's why the book I wrote was called The Choice.
Yes,
you know, but it's not as easy as that. It's a very complex issue. There's a thing called ACEs, which is Adult Childhood Experiences. And you basically get measured on your trauma, and that can, you know, lead to you becoming something that struggles with mental health, or, you know, goes into the world of addiction or criminality, or maybe has a child at a very young age. But when you're born from, and if you were to go into Mountjoy now, you'd see all of those prisoners would have ACEs.
Right.
There is outliers. There definitely is. And them outliers,
people who buck the trend.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, people that that essentially have learned from somebody. That's what happened to me. I seen my brother John's pain and suffering, and I went the opposite direction. Not everybody has that opportunity.
Yeah.
So it's very important for people to understand that the addicts we see mostly on the streets are the ones that are definitely ones that are struggling with their psychological pain and using drugs to overcome it.
Yes.
So it is a mental health issue. We have a huge amount of people taking cocaine in this country, a huge amount of people taking, smoking hash and smoking weed. Why are they not all addicts? Now, some of them don't know they're addicts or don't want to believe they're addicts, but there's a huge amount of them that take drugs, but they're not addicts. And what it stems down to is that they mightn't have that psychological trauma.
Right.
That overshadows the pain that they have psychologically.
So John and people like that who have addictions, that they're trying to blot out the pain.
Exactly, yeah.
The mental pain from something that happened or, yeah.
Yeah, John would have struggled. We found out a bit later in his life, John would have struggled with his mental health. He would have been schizophrenic. He would have had issues there. And definitely he would have had friends that started drugs with him but didn't stay on drugs as long as him.
Yeah.
And he always struggled to come off heroin and methadone, you know. So
because the reality of his schizophrenia was worse than.
Well, we look at people based off the drug they take and not the issue they have.
Yes,
I think that's very important that we need to change that.
How do you change it?
Well, there's a couple of different things. We need to spend money rightly in terms of changing cultural cycles, changing generational cycles. If you're born in a working class community, you are essentially starting off on an unlevel playing field because you've got all these issues passed down to you. Also, then you don't have the resources or the financial resources to actually go into maybe recovery as someone that would have from a middle class to upper class. So you're starting off on an unlevel playing field. So we need to bridge the social inequality gap. And how we do that is we give young people in working class communities better opportunities. So if there's a choice for them to go and walk across the road and make €500 carrying a bag of drugs compared to walking to school or walking to work and going through that barrier of adversity or resilience, to stay in the straight and the narrow, that's what we need to do. And on the other end is we need to decriminalise drugs. We need to stop treating these people as criminals and treat them as people that are struggling with mental health.
Do you think when people hear that decriminalise drugs, they go, oh no, you can't do that, you can't do that. And there is a difference between decriminalising and making them legal, isn't there?
Yes, I think that's what people mix up the most when it comes to that. Even experts, there was a tweet there by an expert, so-called expert in the area.
You don't have to name him.
I won't name him. And he's mixed up legalisation and decriminalisation a lot. Yeah. But decriminalisation means if you see someone with personal use of drugs on the streets, the guard pulls them over and says, if you've got a problematic issue, do you want to go in and get help? And maybe they'll sit in front of, in Portugal, they'll sit in front of a dissuasion committee, which is just a normal building.
So a dissuasion committee. So they it's exactly what it says on the tin. You sit in front of three people and maybe a psychologist and a medical doctor, and they try and dissuade you from taking drugs.
Exactly. Because ultimately that's...
It sounds quaint in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, look, if you look at the recent policy we've put in place, which is just is crazy to think, you've got a three-strike policy now. So if you're caught with drugs, you get a slap on the wrist, second time slap on the wrist, third time, you're going to be... you're going to be incriminated, you're going to get a charge sheet. When has ever a drug addict stopped taking drugs, first of all, from a guard stopping them, and second of all, after three attempts? It doesn't work, it's never worked. Yeah. So we have had policy after policy.
You see, it's important, and this is because there's subtleties in this, and it's very complex, and you know that. Like in Portugal, which is cited all the time as a model that has worked, so they've decriminalised it, but it's still illegal. Drugs are still illegal.
Yes.
Yeah, which is an odd thing. But it seems to work for them because just, if you look at
different.
If you look at the rate of deaths from drugs, it's less than 4 per 100,000 in Portugal, and we're over 40 or something. Like we're 10 times worse off.
We've over one person dying a day. Now, compare that to what we have in terms of the COVID issue. We've unfortunately lost a lot of people to that. But when you look at it, we have over a million people brilliantly and rightly so marching in Phoenix Park for Darkness and Delight every year. Obviously not this year because of the circumstances we're in. We have one person dying a day from an overdose and yet nobody's marching, nobody's talking. You have every Christmas campaigns around car accidents. You've got campaigns about influenza prior to the COVID situation we're in. Nobody talks about it. Why? Because it's a dirty criminal issue and we need to change that. There's people committing suicide because they feel they're letting their family members down because they're a drug addict. That shouldn't be the issue. That shouldn't be happening.
Of course, there are no votes in it.
Exactly. And people, you know, on the streets that are addicts, they don't vote, so the political world won't give, don't care about it.
Well, you keep, you have to keep saying, because you have a platform, and you have to talk to politicians and make them change their minds. this thing that you're involved in, which is a good thing, the Irish Youth Foundation and VHI, they anecdotally, everyone's saying that there's going to be a spike in mental health issues right across the board, including young people, because of COVID. And I was wondering, because I was watching John Horan on the news last night, and the championship is going ahead, which is great news.
Yeah, it's great news.
There'll be nobody at it, but it'll be on the telly. Yeah. But this is the thing, and I'm working it through. You might help me work it through in my head. So the government, they're saying, it hasn't been finalised, but they're saying 19 and a half million, 20 million, they're going to give to the GAA to run the championship.
Mm.
And then CAMS are, you know, stretched. They can't afford to treat young people who have mental health issues. Like, if you were in charge and you had that 20 million, would you spend it on the championship or would you spend it on youth mental health?
It's a hard question. It's a really good question as well, I think. If you had the evidence that it would, I'd say definitely give it to people with mental health. But we don't have that. And the facts are that we do know that sport helps people with mental health.
But the championship is only going to be elite county players.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But it's even a distraction for people. Let's say, for example, there's a lot of young people that now are being more exposed to domestic violence and domestic abuse because they're in the home a lot more, okay? Especially during the lockdown. So yes, they will then have trauma and they will have mental health issues. If they have an opportunity to watch football at the elite level, that can be a distraction for them.
Yeah.
You know, something to look, something forward that was a norm.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I think you talk to any fan in the country, they want sport back. They need sport back.
You know? And that's the important word there, the norm and normal. And it's nearly like a two fingers to COVID. Like, we're getting on with things despite you.
Yeah, I think technology is going to be a bigger issue rather than saying, can we put, you know, 20 million into mental health, which I'd love because that's, you know, I'm an activist in that area.
Yes.
But I think we need to look at technology. You know, we need to start as a country being pioneers in our approach around social media platforms. We need to step up as a country. We need to have our leaders, political leaders, saying we need better regulations.
It's not going to happen.
No, unfortunately.
Because just go down the road there. And you'll see the headquarters, the European headquarters of Google, LinkedIn, Facebook.
Too much money involved.
Too much money involved. Mm. Too much
so
money.
I'd love to take 20 million off those.
Yes.
And put into mental health.
Yeah.
Rather than sport.
So what's your understanding? How is it going to work then? So the All-Ireland final, and if Dublin are going for six in a row, they will be there, is scheduled for what date?
Well, so the All-Ireland final is 5 days before Christmas.
Right.
You know, so that's amazing in itself. You know, to say you played football that year where it was a championship in the winter is going to be something special. You can tell your kids in years to come. It's an extra special championship because it's knockout as well, you know. So it's for anybody.
Is it?
Yeah. So we'll go
so
back.
So there's
and
no
probably
back.
Play two leagues.
There's no back door. There's no.
No. As far as I know, it's knockout straight away. So it's it has an interesting aspect to it straight away, you know.
Right. So six in a row, is that, you know?
No, for me, you know, the big one was everybody spoke about five in a row. And for me, once you've done that, then it doesn't really matter. Like, in terms of, it wouldn't be going around saying in the change room, let's get six. You know, we have a new management team. A lot of new players have come in this year as well. So it's kind of a new start, you know. So we're going for one in a row if we can. But, like, I mean, it's going to be so strange because we haven't played together in so long in the last couple of months where we would have this time of the year. So it's going to be nice to get back with the lads and you know, get back training.
So you've been in more than seven All-Ireland finals, have you?
Seven.
Oh, you won all. You've never lost an All-Ireland final?
No.
Fortunate enough. So 80,000 people in Croke Park and you're greeted with this din. This, like, you can't hear yourself think.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're in that final now, you're going to be walking out, there's going to be tumbleweed.
Well, I think from what I read in the roadmap, if things go to plan and the restrictions are dropped a little bit as time goes on towards the end of the year, that there will be fans at the games.
Like what, 5,000 or something?
They said 5,000 in Croke Park, you know. And 5,000 is a lot because if you watched Ballymun Kickham's play on TG Carter last week, you'd have about 10 or 11 people in the stands that are subs and management.
Yeah.
And you can hear the noise of them.
Okay.
So 5,000,
we'll make,
I'm sure,
yeah,
would make,
yeah,
a bit,
yeah,
of noise and a bit, yeah, of atmosphere. Yeah. Look, there's other sports. You look at soccer, you see there's nobody in the stands.
No.
So
what about, because I've been watching them and it's very odd the way they're playing in the soundtrack of crowds.
Yeah, it is a bit weird. Like, and it's not really, it doesn't feel real.
It doesn't match.
It. So I don't think the GAA should go that route if the games had to be behind closed doors, you know.
I wonder would it work if they were actually putting it through the PA system? Like, if you had a guy there.
Yeah. I wonder if that's that. I'm not sure if they do that, but yeah, it'd be interesting.
So you look fit. So you've been obviously doing your own thing. And that's what people have been doing.
Well, I'm very lucky that the career I'm in is it's the fitness world. It's I have a gym, BD7 in Finglas there. So it's been tough for us, you know, because when we went into lockdown, not all of our members were kind of into the online stuff, and we dropped a huge amount of revenue from that. And then also we had an 8,000 square foot unit. So when we asked the landlord for support, unfortunately, he couldn't give it to us. So we had 3 months, you know, where we had to pay rent and we hadn't got it. Chasing our tail a little bit now. And we're just trying to adapt when we hear all the different restrictions change, and it's being tough, but we're in a good place.
They're changing by the day, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah.
How is married life treating you?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And I suppose the other opportunity of the whole thing is to spend a bit of time with your loved ones.
Sarah,
it's been great with Sarah, and my two dogs. So.
Right. What are the dogs called?
Hugo and Mello. Two chow chows we have. Like, okay. Big bears there.
Right, so IYF, Irish Youth Foundation, /grants, and they're looking for non-profit organisations, charity organisations around the country who are helping young people with their mental health and well-being.
Yes.
And they have grants from 5,000 to 10,000. And I think they have 85,000 to give away.
Exactly,
That's good to see you, Philly.
Thanks.
Mind yourself.
Me.
Good luck in the championship.
Thank you.
Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurma, good Marion. Thank you very much. On Philly McMahon, very best wishes to Philly. A role model to all, both on and off. The field of play, not bad for a Mun man, as in Ballymun. That's from Kevin Fagan. A St. Vincent's man in Boston. And heroin addicts are victims of addiction. They need help, not criticism. Well done to all, from Seamus. And Philly is right. Decriminalisation is the answer. Take crime out of drugs. The clue is in the word decriminalise. No, there is one thing that we didn't discuss, and that is the fact that they're still illegal. So you still have gangs who are preying on addicts by selling them cocaine and heroin, etc., etc. So there still is crime in it. So it's impossible to completely decriminalise it unless you legalise it. But decriminalising the addict is, yes, obviously, that's what they've done in Portugal. Derek says, I've watched Philly playing for the Dubs through the years, but on one occasion I met Philly in the flesh a few years ago when he launched the Longford Mudfest. Such an inspirational guy is Philly. And surely the answer for drug addicts is not to sentence them to jail, but to mandatory residential treatment, which will be best outcome for not only them, but society at large. And that's Stephen in Ballinaclash. Merry Falls, Cold Winters, Skidoo, Man of War, all townslands in Fingal. I didn't know those. And Wood of O, it's a townland near Tullamore in County Offaly. And there are dozens more all over the country, says Paddy in Rathgar, who obviously has an interest in this sort of thing. And everyone in Limerick calls them toppers. You need your pencil topped. You use your topper, says Helen Murphy in Raheen. And I grew up in Dublin and later taught in Dublin primary schools, always using the term pencil pair sharpener. On moving to teach in County Waterford, however, I received blank looks from the children when I used these terms and had to be educated by them to use the term topper. So it's a regional thing. That's Denise, teacher Denise. And Ray, is this a record? Yesterday, 15 September, my passport expired, and at 1 o'clock yesterday, I sent in an application for a new passport online to the passport office in Dublin. This morning, 16th of September at 10 a.m, the new passport arrived at my door here in Connemara. That's a record. That's round of applause for everybody in the passport office. That's amazing. Now, I remember I did it on a Tuesday and got it by the Thursday or Friday, but that's the day after. That's brilliant service, isn't it? That's Jay there. Now, press the button. I have to talk to myself on this. It's the quiz of the day, ladies and gentlemen. Today being the 16th of September 2020, we've gone back to the archives and the newspapers. We found out about pop songs and TV programmes and films and breakthroughs and all sorts of things, and anything that appeared on the pages of the newspapers over the years is up for grabs in our quiz of today. And on the line, we have Elaine O'Reilly in Port Arlington, County Leash. How are you doing, Elaine?
Hi, how are you, Ray?
Great to talk to you, Elaine.
Oh, it's even better to talk to you.
We've a great prize on offer today from Discover Northern Ireland for yourself and Donal, who we'll meet very shortly. It's a two-night stay in the boutique four-star Shipkey Hotel in the historic walled city of Derry. Woo-woo!
Wow!
Yes, that's if you win. Now, you were listening yesterday with your husband, and what was your opinion of the standard of the questions?
We thought they were brilliant questions, and we knew every one of them. We're like, we're going to do that tomorrow, but we probably won't know any of them. Well, I won't.
So you've probably hexed it. You've probably hexed it.
Oh, stop.
Yeah. Now, who's at home with you, Elaine?
My husband, John, he's working from home, and my daughter, Laura, she's living with us. She lives back in because of lockdown.
Yeah, and she was supposed to be elsewhere, was she?
Yeah, she was supposed to be going away. She finished an arts degree in Galway, and she was supposed to be going traveling around the world with a boyfriend, having fun, but she's stuck here. I mean, Daddy, unfortunately.
Ah, she can do it again. She can do it again.
Is there anybody else
in the family?
My son, Ryan, him and his girlfriend stayed with us during lockdown as well. So we're all here till June, from February to June. And they moved out back to Dublin. And my daughter's in Germany.
Uh-huh.
She's living over there. She got home for 2 days.
Right.
After lockdown.
So you're in Port Arlington in County Leash on the Kildare border.
Yes.
Donal Buckley is your opponent today, and he's in Kanturk.
Hello, Ray Hutchings.
Would that be North County Cork?
North Cork, yeah.
Yes.
Kanturk, yeah.
I used to do discos in Fremount.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Jeez. In the hall.
Yes, I you know, that was after our time, I'd say.
Was it? Yeah. Lovely people. They'd always welcome me with a cup of tea and a slice of apple tart.
Yeah, I suppose when we were younger, to the Highland in Newmarket.
Oh, was
we were
it? There. Right, there you go. Yeah. I was never there.
Right.
What are you up to today, Donal?
A bit of farming, Ray. Collected 2 boys from school there now, and a bit of homework, a bit of lunch, and back out then again.
Right. And what age are the lads?
Seven, just gone seven Sunday, and the other fellow will be nine at the end of October.
Right. And you do the farming and the minding and the school and all that?
All that, yeah. Well, their mother will be home then later on. She'll be home for work. She'll finish the homework and give them their supper and
right.
And all that crap. Yeah.
And everybody's happy and well?
We all kind of meet in the middle around 9 o'clock and kind of, yeah, everyone's had their own thing done and we're ready for
great.
Yeah.
Okay. You heard great prize there from Discover Northern Ireland.
Super,
a two-night stay for yourself and the wife, maybe. Four-star Shipkey Hotel in the historic walled city of Derry. 5 questions. All the questions are about this day over the years. You got it by now. Good luck to Elaine O'Reilly in Port Arlington and Donal Buckley in Kanturk. And let's get a bit
good
of tension
up,
going.
Donald.
Good stuff. Good best of luck.
Okay, Elaine, you're first up then. Charles Haughey, former Fianna Fáil leader and Taoiseach, was born on this day in 1925. In which year did he tell the country that we were living beyond our means? Was it 1970, 1980 or 1990?
1970.
It was 1980.
Oh, no!
Okay, early days, don't fret. Donal, your question. Singer Ronnie Drew was born on this day in Dublin in 1934. What famous Irish band did he form in 1962?
Ronnie Drew was with the Dubliners.
He was. Right.
Yeah.
Good start for you. Elaine, your second question is this. Have a listen. Now, that's the theme tune from Miami Vice, which was first broadcast on this day in 1984. What we want to know is who played the part of Crockett in the revamped 2006 movie version of the show. Was it Cillian Murphy or Colin Farrell?
Cillian Murphy?
No, it was Colin Farrell.
No.
You had a 50-50 chance of getting that right. Okay, Donal.
Yeah.
Have a listen to this. Okay, that's a clip from The Life of Brian, which began filming on this day in 1978. Can you name one member of the Monty Python troupe?
John Cleese.
Yes. Or Graham Michael Chapman. Palin. Michael Palin is there. Terry Gilliam, Eric Idle, Terry Jones, they're all there. That gets you a point. Okay, Elaine. Good luck with this one. We need you on the scoreboard. Okay, today in 1983, Arnold Schwarzenegger became a US citizen. He went on to become governor of which state between 2003 and 2011? New York, California, or Washington?
California.
Is the correct answer. You're on the scoreboard, Elaine O'Reilly. Well done. Donal.
Yeah.
Your third question is this. On this day in 1997, Apple Inc. named Steve Jobs as their interim CEO. What was the name of the music playing device he introduced in 2001?
The iPad. The Apple iPad.
No. It was the iPod. And I have
iPod.
To, because the iPod was first and then the iPad and the iPhone followed. Okay, so I needed I need to be strict on that one. Right, Elaine, you're on one. Let's see if we can bring it up to two. Have a listen to this. As you know, Dancing Queen by ABBA, number one in Ireland on this day in 1979. What was the name of the musical and movie which featured all ABBA songs?
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
No, nothing coming.
No.
Oh. Take a stab at it. No.
Sorry.
Mamma Mia. Mamma Mia.
Oh,
you know
no.
it, you know it, don't
I
you?
Do.
Yeah.
Seen the movie?
Yes, of course you did. Donald, this could win it for you if you get it
right.
All right. Have a listen to this. That was Dancing in the Street, which was number one in 1985 in Ireland. Who duetted with Mick Jagger on that song?
David Bowie.
Is the correct answer.
Well done.
Thanks.
Now, the last two questions, you've won it, Donald, but just because we can't use them tomorrow because it's a different day, so I might as well tell you what they are. So your final question, Elaine, was on this day in 1990, Cork won the All-Ireland final, football final. Who did they beat? Kildare, Meath or Galway? What would you have gone for?
Oh, God. Meath
is the correct answer. Yeah, you would have got two. And your final question, Donald, just to get it out of the way, on this day in 1979, Kerry won the All-Ireland Senior Football Final. Who did they beat? Tyrone, Offaly or Dublin?
Dublin
is the correct answer. Yes, yeah. You would have got four. Okay. Elaine O'Reilly, you've been great sport, and we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug.
Oh, which we
hope you'll treasure. Well done, Elaine.
I will. Thank you
Mind
so
yourself.
Much,
bye, bye, bye.
Bye, good luck, Donald. Bye.
Thanks very much, Elaine.
Lovely lady. And Donald, you're off up to Derry. To the
Very
four-star
good.
Shipkey Hotel, thanks to Discover Northern Ireland. Well
Great
done,
stuff.
And mind yourself and the family.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks very much.
See you now. Bye. 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 Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for your text. Did my partner's passport renewal online last year at 9 o'clock on a Monday night. He received it in the post on Wednesday morning. Great services, Mary D. And I mailed you a few months ago to say I sent off a passport app application, that is, around midday, and it arrived in my mailbox next day. Amazing service. And well done, the passport office. They don't get enough praise when things go right, Marty. Well, we've had Fiona, who's the boss lady in the passport office, on a good few times. We should get her back in. She's due a visit again. And she's very helpful. And I don't know if there's, I suppose there's, is there any call for her to come in? Because there's not much movement around with the coronavirus. I was just thinking there, if Dublin, County Dublin, was a country, it'd be on the red list, wouldn't it? Yeah, it would be, if you do the figures on it. Like, if it was a country, we wouldn't be allowed to travel to it. Yes, we're living in it, it's odd. Anyway, we put a call into Fiona and we'll say, congratulations on your service. Everyone thinks you're great. And now we have to talk to a man about a message in a bottle. I should really play the police, but I'm not going to. It's too cliched, so I'm going to play this instead.
Nice.
Now, Michael Spinani says, could you possibly highlight the rising problem with reckless use of motorised scooters? The curb is outside my gate, and as I stepped out today, one narrowly missed me. Then, while driving up Amiens Street, I nearly hit two with children on them as they whizzed out in front of me at the Five Lamps. It's not just today now, it's every day, says Michael. Well, we talked about this, and I got a loan of one, and I brought it into work a couple of days and got a feel for it, and there was big discussion about it, and then it sort of fell off the agenda. But Shane Ross, when he was Minister for Transport, he sent a number of people off to consider should there be legislation around it, and write a report. And they're probably busying themselves now in a Zoom call and writing up a report that'll be put on the shelf and we'll gather dust and we'll never hear of it again. Or maybe it's imminent and I don't know about it. But they're going to introduce some sort of legislation around motorised scooters. They're dangerous enough. They can travel up to 26 kilometres or thereabouts an hour. And the worrying thing about them is that when people stand on them, they're nearly invisible if they don't have, you know, high-vis jackets on them. Whereas on a bike, you're moving and you're a moving target. On a motorised scooter, you just stand still there. And if you're dressed in black and the scooter's black, you're all but invisible. Anyway, we'll come back to that, Michael. On the passports, I have the record. 20 minutes for a passport in the passport office. It's a long story, but it's true, says Bob. Maybe for another day, Bob, we might hear your story. And I applied for my passport on Friday, last 11th of September. It arrived yesterday morning, Tuesday. I honestly thought it would take a few weeks. Amazing service. Well done. All in the passport office. That's Barry May in Athy in County Kildare. You going anywhere nice, Barry? Now, a man who's been all over the world on boats and ships. He's thrown bottles off numerous boats and ships is John Cunningham. And he's on the line now. How are you doing, John?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you again. We spoke a number of years ago when somebody in Iceland found a bottle of yours. This time it's Norway.
Yeah, that's correct. It was Iceland in 2013. That's right.
Yeah. Just tell us about your history of throwing bottles off ships.
Yeah, well, I've been doing it since probably the early 80s, since I started fishing.
Right.
And I've just been doing it ever since. Well, not as much as the last few years, but I've been doing it right through the 90s and early 2000s.
And you would have brought bottles onto the boat, isn't that it?
No, well, we've been drinking water. At that time, we've been all bottled drinking water.
And yes,
just keep the bottles just and pop in a message and throw it overboard.
And what would you write on the message?
Well, what I put on it, this bottle was dropped overboard, the name of the ship was on, and give the date. And exactly where it was.
Yeah.
And put on this bottle with the back to me stating where they found the bottle. And also where and where I dropped the bottle. Because back in the 80s, when I was dropping bottles, I was getting replies back. I found your bottle such and such a place. But I didn't know then. I had that many bottles in at that time.
Yeah.
I didn't know where I dropped it myself. So I just added that wee bit to it.
Uh-huh.
Just to let me know where I dropped it myself.
So you were prolific when it came to dropping bottles. Like, how many would you have dropped over the years? Are we talking hundreds?
Probably since the 80s, yeah, you would be, yeah.
All right. Yeah. And what was the, roughly now, what was the percentage callback? Like,
very small percentage.
Very small percentage, yeah. Yeah,
I was down in Morocco for 3 years fishing and I dropped 50, 60, 80, I don't know, many bottles down there. And you just got the one reply back from down the west coast of Africa.
Right, right. What happened over the weekend then?
It was Saturday morning when I got up. There was a message request on Facebook. And I knew it as a kind of a Nordic, Scandic name to this. And I thought it was something to do with photographs because I take a lot of photographs for fishing magazines and people would be looking for photographs of different boats from Norway and Faroes. I thought that's what it was. But then when I accepted the message and the photograph he sent was my original message that I dropped 21 years ago. And the first thing I seen was MFV Paraclete. That's the boat that was on in 99 at the time.
Paraclete?
Paraclete, yeah.
Right.
And that's the first thing that jumped out when I seen the name of the boat. And I knew straight away, like I've seen the message, I can use my own message, a bottle. So it was 10th of February, 99, I dropped the bottle over the side of the west of the Shetland Islands, east of the Shetland Islands, up in Scotland.
And it's been bobbing around ever since.
I don't know about that. It probably was washed up on this wee island called Grip, in the west coast of Norway. It could have been washed up there a few months after. I don't know. But this boy was out. They were cleaning up rubbish on the shoreline,
right.
Plastics and stuff, and he came on the bottle. And I only realised then on Sunday night that I'd reply back in 99 from another bottle they dropped the exact same day. And I got a reply back in June of 99 from a 9-year-old girl.
Right.
Who found the bottle. She sent me a postcard back. Her mother wrote it for her. And I actually messaged her on Sunday night to see, they just went with the name and checked it out on Facebook to see was it her. I sent a picture of the postcard and she got back to me Monday morning. She said, that was me. She says, I was 9 years of age. And her mum wrote back to me that time in June 99.
And she's 30 now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I'm trying to get inside your head, John. What's the buzz? What's the attraction of doing this?
Just to see how far they would go.
Yeah.
How far and how long they would stay in the water or whatever.
And have any of the bottles gone across the Atlantic?
No.
No,
they haven't actually. No, I was on a ship back 2012 or 14. We're over out in the Flemish Cap, over out on the east side of Newfoundland, and I dropped 30, 40 bottles over there, but no reply whatsoever.
Yes.
None.
Yes.
Not yet.
And you're a gun for hire, are you, John, on fishing boats?
I go out in different fishing ships in the summertime and more commercially in the wintertime.
Yeah. And are these big sort of factory ships?
No. It wouldn't be factory ships. No, there's one man at the minute, the Anya. She's 55 metres long.
Right, that's a fair length all the same. And how long would you stay out at a time?
It would depend. Depends what fishery that. Sometimes we maybe now in October, November, December, we go up off Scotland and get a catch of fish. We might take it to Norway. You could be out 5 or 6 days and maybe you land into Norway and unload your catch and come back again.
Right.
And you don't be gone too long at sea. A couple of weeks is the longest you'd be gone from Killybegs, probably.
Right. We'll keep in touch, John. And if any of those bottles that you dumped in the sea, or sorry, threw overboard into the sea in Newfoundland, if any of them get back to you, do let us know, won't you?
I will do, surely, Ray.
Good talking to you, John. Mind yourself.
Right. Thank you very much. Bye now.
That's it from us. Philip Outer Hayes is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.